Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach, always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I am married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
And Russell probably does want to change that about himself, but he may not know where to go. And if you are in the same boat as Russell, hey, I'm Carol the Coach, and I'm here to help you. This show is Sex Help with Carol the Coach, and it's specifically about sexual addiction. And I got to tell you, you know, this is a field that is becoming more and more rampant with problems. People who feel out of control, they don't know where to go, they don't know what to do. And so I feel very fortunate. I have a lot of gratitude to be able to help you all. If you think you got a problem, or if you're wanting more information, if you're wanting to hear the experts in the field. This is a show to tune into every Monday night at 9 o'clock, and we disseminate information that will hopefully help you get to the right place. 10 years ago, 20 years ago, you might not have known what to do, but what I understand is this is the only sexual addiction show on the Internet. So I am fortunate. I have a lot of gratitude to be here with you. And, you know, you've heard me say it before a million times. We're all pioneers. I'm a pioneer because I'm helping you with this issue, and you're a pioneer because 40 years ago, the same types of sexual addiction had not occurred, in part because the Internet was not accessible and available. Now, I'm not saying that there wasn't such a thing as sexual addiction, but it has grown rampant with all the pornography, cyber sex, and internet availability that we have today. And so my job as a clinician, as a social worker and a psychotherapist, is to educate other clinicians on how to help their clients that come into the office. And it's also our jobs to get with the people that are in leadership roles who can classify this disorder as something that deserves insurance reimbursement, deserves inpatient treatment, deserves group and individual therapy, and family and marital therapy. And, you know, I got to tell you, there's ways to get around some of this stuff. You know, there's no doubt that when I see couples and I'm talking to them about how sex addiction has affected their family, even if it looks like it's couples therapy, I can code it family therapy because we're improving the health and well-being of the family. However, I recently received from a colleague of mine an article that not only invigorated me, but it encapsulated how I feel about this issue. Now, I'm here to tell you that a lot of people don't believe that sexual addiction occurs. And they think it's just bad behavior or it's people having fun. They don't get that this is obsessive and it's compulsive and it affects a million different people. Housewives, mothers, fathers, husbands, priests, doctors, attorneys, plumbers, heating and air conditioning men, women, kids, teenagers, they just don't get it. So if you are struggling with this disorder, know that we as a community, and I say community because there are certified sexual addiction therapists that are working together not only to increase our education, but we're working together to really help the general public, the mainstream media, the mainstream therapists, doctors, and attorneys realize what this issue is all about. And I got to tell you, when I'm working with clients, it seems like in terms of professionals, the professions that really seem to get it are attorneys because their clients are in their office, they've broken the law, and they are sitting there listening to their clients talk about how they couldn't stop, how obsessive and compulsive this behavior was. And, you know, they're watching these people, and they get that, you know, this has created heartache. This has broken laws. This has affected not only their client in the office, but their families, their communities, their kids. And so my buddy, Rob Weiss, who is an amazing educator, let alone he's a great writer. He's the founding director of the Sexual Recovery Institute, and he currently is a director at the ranch. And he's a clinical psychotherapist and educator, and he's provided sexual addiction treatment training internationally. He's been on, different television shows, the Today Show, Oprah, CNN, ESPN. He's a very personable guy, and he wrote this article, and I want to talk to you a little bit about that. Because if you're listening to this show, I want you to know we are working for you. We want the psychiatric community to understand this disorder, and they are years and years behind. So Rob Weiss writes an article called No Sex, Please, We're Psychiatrists. And he says, last week we learned that the proposed diagnosis of hypersexual disorder, and you remember I told you that I thought that this would be in the DSM-5, and I said it would be called hypersexual disorder. Well, Rob disagrees a little bit, and he says, last week we learned that the proposed diagnosis of hypersexual disorder, more commonly known as sexual addiction, would not be included as a criteria-based diagnosis in the forthcoming DSM-5. As I've written previously, I did not expect hypersexual disorder to make it into the DSM-5 as a standalone diagnosis. Rob didn't think it would, and he's got way more education and information than I do, but I was hoping it would, and actually I did think it would. I knew that the terminology sexual addiction was being rejected by professionals because they didn't believe there was a physiological withdrawal that occurred. But I felt like hypersexual disorder really identified that obsessive compulsive behavior that gets people in trouble, that keeps them breaking the law, that destroys families, and that makes them feel a lot of shame and low self-esteem. Now, Rob says that he did, however, expect it to be listed in the appendix of next spring's publication as a potential diagnosis requiring further research. Lamentably, he says, the APA apparently lacks the political will to even consider the idea that consensual sexual behavior for some people can be problematic. Now, see, that's interesting because I didn't know that this is an issue in part because it's seen as consensual sexual behavior. So in other words, if it resulted in just molestation or rape, we might have somebody doing something about it. But because this is men and women who make the choice initially to engage in this kind of sexual behavior, the professionals don't realize that that choice no longer exists as this disorder becomes more and more frequent and more out of control. So, he says, frankly, the organization's decision has left me and a whole lot of other highly trained, eminently reasonable, forward-thinking mental health and addiction professionals feeling frustrated, disappointed, and downright angry. Now, you know, interestingly enough, I did not feel that... How do I want to say this? I was very disappointed that this was not in the DSM-5 because that's going to impact insurance reimbursement. But what I know is that because we're pioneers in this field, this is probably another 5 or 10 years down the road before it even gets into the DSM, which is our diagnostic statistical manual that helps insurance companies reimburse and helps doctors diagnose. And it puts a label on people, but it's a label that helps to pay for treatment. So knowing that we were pioneers, I get the fact that, you know, this is going to take a long time. Now, Rob says, much of my frustration and anger stems from the fact that the master's and PhD level clinicians who are seeing and treating sexual addicted clients on a regular basis had very little input into the APA's decision-making process. I am one of those clinicians. I am a licensed psychiatric social worker. I'm a clinical social worker. And I've been in the field 32 years, and I've been doing this work for about 4. And actually, it's going on about 5 now. And truly, I feel blessed to be working with you all. Because here's what I know to be true. When I work with somebody who has sexual addiction, who really wants to work, you all are the most dedicated, caring, loving people I know. And you're in so much pain, with so much shame, you want help. And so I feel blessed to work with you. You know, I feel like you have a lot to teach me about your pain, your childhood trauma, or your habitual behaviors that have gotten out of control. And so I got to tell you, even though we're making you sound like you're subjects in a psychological study, anybody who works with sexual addiction, well, I can't speak for everybody, but I know that, you know, you mean the world to me because you're really hurting and you want to get better and you don't necessarily know where to go. And there's a lot of well-meaning therapists that don't know how to treat you. And that's why you're listening to the show. Now, I got to admit, we're in December. I couldn't get anybody to come on the show. You know, people are busy and they're crunching because they're taking holiday off. And so I said, okay, you got me for this month. That's not so bad. Next week you have Joe Court. Next week, actually, it's my husband's 50th birthday. And I'm excited to say that we are going to be out of town and celebrating his birthday. And so I'm going to replay Joe Court, who's an amazing therapist who has a lot of information about why men in particular will participate in risky sex, sometimes with other males, and yet they're not homosexual. I've aired it before. He's got a great message, and I love when he comes on the show. So that's what we've got next week. But in the meantime, I want to tell you that The good news is that Rob Weiss, and that you can Google him. I mean, he. Whenever I've had a problem and somebody needed to get into a treatment center, and I call Rob, he connects me to his people. I say his people, they're his staff. And they work with my clients, and they do whatever it takes to get them into treatment. They bend over backwards. I cannot tell you how much I love the ranch. It's an amazing facility. It's right outside of Nashville, Tennessee. I actually studied there. And Rob's Sexual Recovery Institute has been paramount in changing how sexual addiction is treated and what we need to do. Now, Rob says that he realizes that the real issue behind this not being accepted is because there's not enough research. And here's my pledge to you all in 2013, is I'm going to get with Rob, I'm going to figure out what research studies we need to do, and I'm going to start doing my own research studies. I'm going to use whatever they have, and I'm going to ask you, the listener, to participate in the research, obviously anonymous, so that we all can make a difference in this field. You know, it's kind of like when alcoholics were not acknowledged as having a real addiction. They were seen as morally ineffective, and it just really was very sad to see that, you know, both alcohol and drug addiction was never really seen as an issue until there was more research done on this. So Rob suggests that our professional leaders, the men and women who create and approve the DSM, appear to be socially, politically, and perhaps even morally behind the times. Their lack of action mirrors the organization's tendency to avoid pushing the envelope in any meaningful way. The conservatism stems in part from the APA membership's growing lack of involvement in the day-to-day real world challenges that people face in the digital age. And so, in other words, she says, boy, if they were on the front lines as we are, they would get that this is an ongoing problem. And he lastly says that, oddly, the APA's decision arises at a time when the general public and the media have come to recognize and accept sexual addiction, and to a lesser degree, romantic addiction, as genuine, seriously destructive issues, every bit as real and debilitating as alcoholism, compulsive gambling, and drug addiction. At the same time, he says, avenues towards the development, maintenance, and escalation of sex and love addiction are increasing by the minute. Every new technological advance, it seems, can be utilized for its intended purpose and also for sex. The simple, undeniable fact is the tech connect boom has greatly increased the average person's ability to anonymously and affordably access intensely stimulating sexual imagery, such as pornography, and to engage in an almost unfathomable array of virtual sexual experiences. And you know what I'm talking about. To be able to get into chat rooms, to use webcams, to participate in sex games, and to be instantly geolocated, contacting, and hooking up with casual, anonymous, and paid-for sexual partners. While this is not problematic for the majority, similar to drinking and gambling, some people are truly lost in the sexual quagmire. So, thanks to the APA's continued ignorance, it is feigned or willful. We have no way to accurately assess and diagnose these individuals, as apparently their problem doesn't exist. And, you know, today I worked with a woman whose husband is involved in gaming. And she came to me and she said, my husband will not participate with the family. He's a prosecutor in our city and very well known, but he games probably 4 out of 8 hours every day at work and 4 to 6 hours every night when he gets home. Okay, so that's what she thought the issue was. And then, as she explored it more deeply, she found out that it wasn't just gaming, that this man was involved in fantasy sex with gamers, and he was meeting them, and he was corresponding with them, and he was chatting with them, and he was calling them, and he was spending money on them, and it had gone into that world of sexual addiction, even though it had started out as gaming. That's what Rob and I want you to understand, is that this issue becomes riskier and riskier. The frequency and the intensity increases, and the out-of-control behavior becomes worse and worse. And for that very reason, we want people to understand that what may sound like innocent behavior can quickly turn into out-of-control, obsessive, and compulsive behaviors, in part because of the three A's: affordability, the anonymous status, and accessibility. All it takes is a click of your mouse. Okay, now if you have some questions, feel free to call me at 646-595-3284. The telephone lines are wide open, and I'd love to hear what you have to say, what you think, what you believe, and what you feel about your own sexual addiction or about somebody else's sexual addiction that is affecting you. You know, Rob actually describes a client, and he says, Zach is a 29-year-old graduate student. He has been viewing hardcore pornography online daily since he was 11 years old. He entered therapy because he has little to no interest in relationship-based sexual or intimate experiences. And you guys know what I'm talking about. Once you've looked at porn long enough or experimented with prostitutes or men or for the women, once you've experienced illicit sex on an ongoing basis and had fantasies about that, normal sexual relationships are no longer exciting. So he says Zach is not participating much in sexual or intimate experiences. In fact, the only in-the-flesh encounters that seem to turn him on are the anonymous encounters he sets up using his smartphone sex locator apps. And then Rob gives three different apps, but I'm not going to because there's no reason to share that with you. Even this type of sex is becoming less and less fulfilling. He says that what he really wants to do is to date a girl seriously and eventually get married. But every time he tries to do that, he finds himself fearful of relationship intimacy and unable to perform sexually. Now, I'm sure anybody who's listened to the show, as I read this about Zach, what would you say? You know it. I've talked about it a million. Sexual addiction is an intimacy disorder. And when you have difficulty being intimate, you really have difficulty being authentic and transparent in the most vulnerable of situations in a sexually healthy relationship with another person. So Rob says, Zach returns to online porn and anonymous hookups. Now he's depressed, anxious, and self-loathing because he can't date, can't mate, and can't create the type of family unit he desperately desires and deserves. So Rob says, what is this therapist to tell this man? How can we diagnose him? Certainly we can say that he's depressed and suffering from anxiety and low self-esteem, but these issues are symptoms of the underlying problem, sexual addiction, rather than the problem itself. Now, you've heard me say it before. If you're somebody who started viewing porn early in your childhood, and that situation has escalated, and now that's the only way you can get turned on, you suffer from one type of sexual addiction. Unfortunately, some people have had childhood issues that affected their core. They experienced so much trauma that they, too, have an issue with sexual addiction, but it is the symptom of an underlying problem. And that underlying problem is trauma. So you get to decide. Are you suffering from some sort of trauma? Have you been abused and neglected in your childhood? Do you want to heal those wounds? In some ways, I call it the wounded soul, because a lot of people just don't believe they really can get healthy. Do you have trouble developing adult intimate attachment skills? Well, we as clinicians assess and treat a sexually addicted client's concomitant symptoms, and we have trouble with actually assisting them in long-term emotional and psychological health if we don't have the available resources. And in part, the available resources will not truly be available to the mainstream, and I really do mean, you know, the sexually addicted or the hypersexual, until we can actually get the diagnosis in the DSM-5, have it legitimized, do the research, find out what works, find out what doesn't, find out the criteria, and take it that next level. So Rob finishes by saying, so I asked the APA, what are we to tell Zach and the tens of thousands of other clients who present with similar sexual and romantic issues? What tools have you offered to those of us actively working in the mental health treatment field? You know, he reminds us that 80% of all mental health therapists are master's and PhD level therapists. We're not the docs. And yet we're on the front lines treating these issues, and we need help. So he suggests perhaps it's time for the MDs to step aside as the sole decision makers in this area, allowing the clinicians to provide treatment to the working well to help define the problems we treat. And I'm telling you, Rob Weiss, who's a clinical psychotherapist and educator, has made it his mission to provide sexual addiction treatment training internationally for psychology professionals, addiction treatment centers, and the U.S. military. And I am happy that he is a friend of mine. We are actually supposed to do some trainings in the spring. And as you can see, he's an excellent writer. He's got his finger on the pulse of what is going on. And, you know, with people that are passionate like Rob, I have no doubt that we will get where we need to be. So, Rob, thank you for this incredible article, and I hope that it stimulates anybody who's listening tonight to know that, you know, we're working for you, and we believe in you, and we know that it's only a matter of time for us to be able to help you, to be able to help your kids, and to be able to help your grandchildren, because this is going to be an epidemic, and hopefully the resources will be available and we'll be able to do some prevention and we'll be able to turn it around. Okay, now I said tonight we were going to be doing emails and phone calls. So again, my number is 646-595-3284. Don't hesitate to call me. I know it's scary. You know, I've been doing radio talk shows for probably 10 years, and I never have problems getting callers, except for when I do sexual addiction work. And I get it. There's a lot of shame. There's a lot of fear. You're afraid that somebody's going to recognize you. But I got to tell you, if somebody would recognize you, they also have an issue, or they wouldn't be listening to the show. So I say, hey, use me as your own personal psychotherapist and sexual addiction therapist. Now, if you've been following the show, you know that Sam has been corresponding with me for a few weeks. And he sent me an email that says, hey, Carol, first of all, let me say words cannot express how grateful I am that you are there trying to help me. as well as to help all of us. If it wasn't for you and your podcast, I would never have known I had a problem or what it was or how to fix it. I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for what you're doing for all of us. Sam, it's my pleasure. It's my honor. And I have encouraged you to call the show, but I know you're one of those people that's afraid, you know. And see, I can't know the shame that's followed you around. And I can't know what it would be like if you thought somebody did discover you. But I'm telling all my listeners that I hope that 2 years from now, I have a whole queue of people that want to get on the call and get some help free of charge from Carol the Coach. So anyway, he said, I listened to your podcast this week. And he said, actually, I listened to it about 3 times. You made some predictions about my situation, and I wanted to update you to let you know how you did. Okay, guys, here we go. You said it was a really bad idea for me to be chatting with 5 women that I called my sponsors. I know better to call them sponsors now. Yeah, you remember Sam said that the women that knew what was going on in his life and were praying for them, for him, he felt were similar to sponsors. And I said, Sam, there is no way that these women are sponsors. They may be helping you. I'm not saying that they're not, but sponsors from a 12-step program work you through the 12 steps. And with sexual addiction, you cannot have a sponsor of the opposite sex. It just doesn't work. It's not right. So don't fool yourself. And then he said, you said they probably had sexual addictions too. And it turns out one of them crossed the line and tried to do sex chatting with me. I almost gave in, but somehow got the courage to say no and delete her. So yes, you are right. You also said I was having an intimate relationship with these women and hiding it from my wife, which was not a good thing. And in fact, I caught myself telling them more secrets about myself than I tell my own wife. And I spend more time talking to these women than talking with my wife. So you were right about that, too. You told me I was full of myself by calling these women sponsors, that they were really my girlfriends, and the addict inside of me was laughing at me with my made-up story of why I needed to continue to chat with them. Okay, now, for anybody who's listening to the show for the first time, I did not say that. I would never say that. Sam, what I said was that these women were developing an emotional intimacy with you that was not healthy because you have a wife. And you need to develop that with your wife, not with these women. So I never called them your girlfriends. And then I didn't say the addict inside of you was laughing at you, but I did say that the addict inside of you wanted you to believe that so that you would continue to chat with them. You know, it's kind of like a Jekyll and Hyde thing. Every person that has an addiction has a good side and has a problematic side. And the addict will, I make it sound like it's some outside source, but really, the addict inside of you is stronger than you, the person. I know that sounds terrible, doesn't it? But if you listen to any of Patrick Carne's CDs about sexual addiction, he will tell you, and I 100% agree, that when you have a full-fledged addiction, you are not strong enough to fight it by yourself. You need a certified sexual addictions therapist. You need a sponsor. You need a 12-step group. And he calls that, Dr. Carne calls that, the committee. And the committee outweighs the addict. But you alone cannot outweigh the addict. The addict is stronger than you. So, Sam, you're really, really working hard, and you are trying. But you don't have enough resources yet to make a difference in your life. So, you said In fact, you started to really enjoy the chatting and became addicted to the chatting and was thinking about maybe doing more with these women. So you were right about that, too. You said, until I stopped doing that with them, I was not showing any signs of sobriety. Yes. As a matter of fact, I felt you were in full-blown addiction, Sam. So I said, don't kid yourself. You may be really contemplating the rights and the wrongs, the goods and the bads, but I'm telling you, you're doing it by yourself, and it isn't going to work. As we say in this field, it ain't going to work, Sam, so you need to develop a committee, and that is a certified sexual addictions therapist, a sponsor, and a 12-step meeting. And if you, anybody who's listening to the show lives in an area where there are not SA groups or SAA groups, then get online. Find out how you can call them, because there's no excuse for anybody to say that the resources aren't available. Do I think face-to-face is better? Oh, you better believe it. I'm a personal life coach. My job is to talk with people on the phone and help them reach their potential. And I do that, and I do that well. But I got to tell you, I'd much rather have them be in my office because I love face-to-face work. Sam also said, Carol, you said that sometimes you need to speak with authority because that helps people listen. Okay, your authoritative tone woke me up and hit me on the head and caught my attention. So within an hour of listening to your podcast, I said goodbye to these women and deleted my account. Oh, and I told them to listen to your podcast if they wanted to know why. Sam, you remind me of a client that I have right now. His addiction was strip clubs. And he used to go to these strip clubs, and he was fairly wealthy. And so he'd go to the strip clubs, and he'd meet these women, and he developed relationships with them. As a matter of fact, he has three dancers, a.k.a. strippers, that he supports right now. Well, one of them works with him. And she actually got him to me. She looked up sexual addiction. She found the only certified sexual addictions therapist in Indianapolis, and she hooked this man up with me. I really appreciate that. She obviously is a very bright woman. But he said to me the other day, he said, Carol, I would like to bring her to my session because I think she's the only person that gets that I have a sexual addiction. And although I believe that to be true, and if he were single, I might have him bring her. He's married. So I can't have him bringing her to my session. Talk about a betrayal of a marriage. I can't do that. You know, so it's kind of like you said, well, I told these women to listen to your podcast. All right, well, you told me that I objectify women. Is what Sam's telling me, and it explains why just a glance at a pretty woman was a trigger back to the addiction. I have never thought about that before, but you're absolutely right, and I need to figure out how to stop doing that. Do you have any ideas to help me with that? Yes, Sam. First of all, get yourself to an SA or SAA meeting, because men in those meetings talk about objectification of women a lot. You know, they are there to help you learn the 3-second rule, which most of my clients say is way too long. Now, the 3-second rule is the minute you look at a woman and maybe you're thinking, man, I love her breasts, or wow, doesn't her butt look great, or boy, would I like to have sex with her, or whatever it is, you're just to think of a big red stop sign or to think of your wife, or to think of your favorite peaceful place. Do something to distract yourself from that thought and move on in your thinking. But what I know to be true is that's a wonderful technique, but it really requires the help of other people encouraging you to do that. It's that committee again, Sam. So you can use thought stopping, or you can use the 3-second rule, which, as I said, my clients suggest maybe the 1-second rule. But what I really want you to do, Sam, and I'm going to challenge you this week, because I'm not going to be talking to you for a couple weeks. I am going to challenge you, Sam, to get yourself to an SA or an SAA meeting, and I know you've said, no, you don't want to be discovered and blah, blah, blah. I've got doctors, attorneys, senators, governors. I mean, there are people all throughout the United States that I've hooked up with the right support groups, and I don't think you can do it without. And if you don't think that you can get it done without, then maybe we need to get you into a treatment center where you can really look at some of your behaviors and make some contracts with yourself and hold yourself accountable and feel the support from a hospital setting or treatment setting. And then what I know to be true is what you do in the hospital or in the treatment center occurs outside. Sam, I wish you could be part of my sexual addictions group. You know, I run a therapy group. Thanks to Rob Weiss, who really encouraged me to run a group in Indianapolis, the only sexual addictions group here. Now, Sam says, you told me that I still had issues with denial and needed to move past that before I could move on. And the truth is, I do have denial of what I think is best for me and how I think I can get better and what I think is wrong with me. I'm having a really hard time finding my missing parts in my life, holes in my relationship and holes in my life in general. My faith is such an important part of my life. I've told you about how much I pray. I pray with my wife. I pray with my family. I have a very successful career. I have a blast with my wife, and I have a tremendous amount of fun with my family. I don't have any past trauma that is affecting me. So, yes, perhaps I'm avoiding something very important that I'm still in denial. But then I must be still in denial because I don't have this big secret that's contributed to my addiction, but I do have the big secret about my addiction. And I keep it for my wife, and I do agree that it's limiting 100% intimacy. And as I think about it, I have always been a cheater on girlfriends, so perhaps that has manifested itself throughout all my life. I don't know. I'm still confused about the core problem I need to fix. I need help figuring that out. Perhaps you have some ideas to point me in the right direction. So, Sam, I'm not sure what area you live in, but I told you, you need to go to www.sexhelp.com, and you need to put in your own zip code, and then you need to find a therapist in your area that's certified, that has specific expertise with sexual addiction. Okay, you don't think you could do that because you're too afraid of being discovered? Well, then you need to find a zip code that's an hour away and get yourself to that therapist. I don't care what you do to feel comfortable, but you need to get into therapy. Maybe you don't have childhood trauma. Not everybody does. But your behaviors are out of control, and they're not going to get better without the help of a support group and a good therapist. So lastly, Sam says, you told me that I need to get help and fix my problems, and it's only going to get worse. What am I going to do? Wait until I cheat on my wife and she catches me and I lose my marriage and my family? Before I listen and fix this problem, no, I don't know what this is. I think he got this a little bit wrong, but he says, I want to work on this while I still have a chance. You told me that I need to find a 12-step program, and then I had no right to discount them without even knowing anything about it. But now keep in mind, Carol, the only reason why I knew about your podcast was because I was searching for porn a month ago. I've never even heard the term sexual addiction. This is all new to me. But no, I don't want to lose my wife. I don't want that to happen. And I'm sorry I discounted the 12-step program and all the people in it. So now, after listening to your podcast, again, I'm willing to consider a 12-step program. I did go and find out there are none in my city, but I started looking down the online ones to see what time would fit me. It's a step in the right direction. Just considering it, one step at a time. I was actually disappointed I couldn't find a face-to-face meeting that fit my schedule and location, but I will consider giving this online version a try. Yes, Carol, that was just a maybe. Is that the addict inside me not allowing me to say 100% yes? Well, Sam, all I can say is in less than a month's time, you have really, really, really progressed. You're doing a great job. You're looking at your options. You say you're 18 days clean. There's been no porn, no sex chatting, no masturbation, no lustful glances of women in the store. And you're willing to look at, I didn't say it was online support group, it's a telephone support group. So I am thrilled that you're willing to do that. And it sounds like there are no certified sexual addictions therapists. Now, here's what I can tell you, and I have been doing this show since March, and I've never said this to anybody, but truly, I am more than happy as a consult service. You're going to have to pay me. I'm about $100 an hour, but I'm more than happy to Skype with you or talk to you on the phone personally and get you to the right services. I can't deliver therapy on an ongoing basis because it's not considered professionally ethical. Although I am in a disagreement with that, but I have to follow my ethical guidelines. I do believe that in today's technology, to be able to Skype, I've done marital therapy, I've done all sorts of things in countries that allow me to do it, and it's been amazing. But I get that, you know, it's always better to do face-to-face, and it sounds like you want face-to-face. You want face-to-face support groups. So I commend you for all the growth you made, and I can tell you're breaking through the denial. And I am pleased as punch that you're looking into the suggestions I've made. And, you know, what I know to be true is when you make those steps, there are other people listening. You know, we have over 8,000, actually it's close to 10,000 listeners now across the world. You know, I know that may not be that great. I mean, in Indianapolis, I had the Sex, Love, and Relationship show with Carol the Coach, and I had 80,000 listeners. But truly what I know to be true is that you can get on YouTube, you can download this show, you can get every podcast I've ever done, and it's very educational. And it, again, I feel very honored to be able to talk with you. So, Sam, you are a great role model for getting the help that you need and helping others to get the help they need too. So thank you for your in-depth emails and your constant checking in. And, of course, I would love for you to call, but not next week because I'm not going to be around. And I have a lot of hope for you, Sam. Once you get involved in a 12-step group and a sponsor and, you know, you get some help with a therapist who's trained in this, you're going to lead that authentic and transparent life you want so badly for yourself, which, of course, is going to increase your relationships with other people, especially your wife. That's my hope, my strength, and my recovery for you, Sam. So thank you for being an avid listener to the show. All right. Well, I so appreciate everybody listening tonight and letting me go off on my rant about not getting into the diagnostic statistical manual. And just reading that article from my friend Rob reminds me of what a close community this is and how much we want to help. I hope you felt that tonight. You know, we've had a hard week between the shootings in Oregon and the deaths in Connecticut with all the children. A lot of people have really, really been traumatized. And one of the things that I do is that I do television appearances and I help people to cope. And so when that occurrence happened, I got several calls. I went on our NBC affiliate and talked about how you could talk to your kids about it. And again, when we are authentic and real, that is true intimacy, whether it's with our wives, our husbands, whether it's with our friends, our neighbors. And you know, I was talking with an anchor, and I got done with my segment on how to talk to kids, and I looked at him, and his eyes were filled with tears, and he shared with me he had a six-year-old daughter that gets so excited about the school bus, and he didn't want this to tarnish her excitement about school. And the good news is kids are resilient, and they really are able to cope with a lot of trauma and tragedy. It's us as adults that if we don't work out our stuff, it stays inside of us and chips away at our self-esteem. So as I end every show, I tell you, I want you to fearlessly have the courage to be yourself. And that can be very difficult to do if there are two or three or four parts of you. And so do what you need to do to get the help you need. And I'll be back in a couple weeks. I think it will be, I don't know if I'll be here on New Year's Eve. I kind of doubt it. But I promise to play some good shows, and then we'll see you back in 2013. Again, it's my privilege to work with you, and I want you to know you can always email me at carolthecoach@aol.com, or you can go to my website, as archaic as it is. It is Sex Help with Carol the Coach. And if you want the bigger bang for your buck, go to Dr. Karn's site, which is www.sexhelp.com. And, hey, if you're looking for a treatment center, I'm going to give Rob a plug tonight. He inspired me. Go and look up The Ranch in Nashville, Tennessee, or something called Sexual Recovery Institute. You can't go wrong with those two organizations. So I hope that you have a happy holiday. I'll catch you in 2013 when we actually have a physician, a psychiatrist from the Meadows who's going to be talking about his view on addiction. I'm really looking forward to spending some time talking to him. And have a happy, happy new year, and we'll talk to you soon. Fearlessly have the courage to be yourself.